Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, October 5th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
In Cleveland, representing the currently trailing Indians, I'm Len Peralta.
Spoiler.
And from Alameda, California, I am Patrick Norton.
And from somewhere in L.A. County, I don't know where, I am the show's producer, Roger.
Sarah Lane has the day off today. She's traveling the lands with her dog, Otis. I'm sure it's going to be full of stories when she returns next week. But let's start with a few tech things you should know. Microsoft announced its Surface Pro 6 starting at $899 and its Surface Laptop 2 starting at $999. But when they first went up for order, you could only get those prices if you bought a bundle, which ended up costing more than that. Then, Thursday, versions of both products were offered at that starting price with no bundled involved, but only if you got the color platinum. If you wanted other colors, you could only get more expensive versions, albeit with higher specs, like 256 gigabytes of storage instead of 128. So the complaining has begun. Samsung issued its Q3 forecast, expecting record operating profits of around 17.5 trillion won. That's up 20.4% from a year ago, beating analyst estimates. Demand for Samsung's memory chips makes up the largest part of that growth. Chips account for 80% of Samsung's operating profit. All right, let's talk a little bit more about this China hardware hack. The denials have not stopped. Amazon, Apple, Supermicro, and China all issued more detailed denials of the Bloomberg story that, if you missed yesterday's episode, claimed that motherboards from Supermicro were found to contain chips that created backdoor access. Now, Amazon issued a full-page statement, denies finding malicious chips or working with the FBI, and says its third party only found software issues with Supermicro chips. The Bloomberg story said the third party is the one that found the hardware. Apple denied finding malicious chips or having contact with the FBI and disputed the number of Supermicro motherboards it ever owned, saying it was only 2,000, not 7,000. Supermicro denied any investigation happened or that it was contacted by any government agency regarding any kind of issue like this. And China continued its call for cooperation on supply chain security. In addition, the National Cybersecurity Center, which is part of the UK's GCHQ spy agency, told Reuters it has no reason to doubt Apple and Amazon on these denials. And it added that confidentially, it, quote, urges anybody with credible intelligence about these reports to contact us. And the Washington Post is quoting multiple anonymous U.S. officials saying they're unsure of the accuracy of the story. That doesn't stop Bloomberg, though. Bloomberg posted a follow-up to the chip hack story alleging Supermicro was the target of two software attacks as well. These are less groundbreaking than the hardware hack. Bloomberg sources say a customer portal was infected. That's one that was used for critical software updates. It was breached in 2015 to deliver some infected firmware that would grant outside access to server communications. Facebook apparently was affected by this breach and said in a statement that it had purchased Supermicro motherboards for use in a lab, but the hardware was never put into production use. Apple also described a firmware issue in its denial of the hardware attack. And another source told Bloomberg Apple found that some cards from Supermicro came with outdated firmware that included a known but patched, if it had been updated, vulnerability that could have been exploited. Patrick, this is beginning to fascinate me, not just on the technical aspects, which we talked about yesterday, but on these very specific and out of character denials. Even when you're you're denying something for real, you usually don't go to this length to deny it. Certainly Apple is out of character and issuing a full page statement on this.
I mean, Apple's okay. So, you know, Apple never has security issues. And when they have security issues, they downplay them or they put them in page 72 when you click through on the update of something. For them to be like, we only own 2,000 of those motherboards, not 7,000. This is weird. And the denials are peculiar. I'm with you. One, it's a huge story from Bloomberg. Two, the level of crazy that's going on around it right now in terms of the responses, they're all, I mean, you know, I don't use this word often enough, hinky.
Yeah. No, the extended show that goes out to patrons, which often is a little sillier and involves food, involved a discussion between Justin and I kind of parsing the original statements that Amazon and Apple gave, which were short. But man, my view on this changed when I saw these very detailed statements, because it's not that I immediately say, oh, well, they must be telling the truth and Bloomberg is wrong. It creates the kind of thing that I try to do on this show is read the tea leaves well. I've been doing this long enough to say, well, when you see this, it usually means that. I've never seen this before. Bloomberg is well-respected, has a vetted editorial process. There are very good reasons you keep your sources anonymous, because if you don't have them be anonymous, sometimes you blow them as sources and you can't use them anymore, or you may ruin their life if they're in the intelligence agency. I think one of the best articles on this was written by TechCrunch, just about the difficulties of covering cybersecurity and the intelligence agencies in general, because your sources have to be anonymous. So it's not that the sources are anonymous that's the problem with Bloomberg. In fact, Bloomberg went very far to say, we got multiple sources that tell us the same thing. We got 17 people corroborating the story in one way or another. So they did their due diligence. They've got an editorial staff that wouldn't let their reporter put this out if they didn't feel comfortable that these sources were accurate and reliable. And yet, instead of the usual flat denials, no, that's not true, or the vague denials, which might imply a gag order, you have Amazon and Apple very detailed saying, no, no hardware, never happened, didn't talk to the FBI, and Apple even saying, and we're not under a gag order on this, in case that's what you thought.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the most verbiage I think of, I've ever seen from an Apple announcement that wasn't. I mean, usually when Apple's foaming at the mouth, it's because they're telling you how wonderful their new widget is.
Right.
It's awesome and it's super and it's shiny and they
revolutionary.
This,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, for them to be basically this is Apple in a corner. And I don't know who they're reacting for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This seems like posturing for a third party who is, you know, not Supermicro and not the FBI. This is like somebody Apple has contractual obligations with, or so. You know what I mean? This smells like Apple posturing.
Well, and the GCHQ, GCHQ not having to be badgered into issuing a statement, but just coming out with a statement is odd. Zach Whitaker at TechCrunch, who I just mentioned earlier, his best guess at what could explain this is the people who discovered it couldn't tell anyone. There are cases in national security situations where you aren't even allowed to tell your boss. The CEOs of these companies might not know. And there are other examples of those kind of stories that are now known from the past. He's like, that could be one scenario that explains this, which is the people that discovered these chips were told very quickly, don't you tell a soul that this existed for national security reasons.
Right.
Let's move along. The U.S. state of California has passed a law requiring net-connected devices, basically targeting Internet of Things type devices, to use unique passwords when they're sold to consumers, or force consumers to choose passwords before the device goes into operation. But basically saying you have to take reasonable security measures. You can't just have a default 12345 or admin password on routers and Internet of Things devices. Customers also now have a provision under this law that allows them to more easily sue for damages if they experience harm as a result of a company ignoring this law. What do you think, Patrick? I mean, it's good practice to say you should, in fact, put out unique passwords on your devices.
Okay. So now every manufacturer is going to have to create a unique password for their each individual product,
or just make the setup process require the consumer to set a password themselves. I think that's probably the more reasonable route.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. This is on a long list of peculiar things that have come out of the legislature this year. I mean, on one hand, you know, as someone who deals with a lot of pathetic security situations, not because I am super security guy, but just because people are like, hey, my thing is acting odd. And it's like, oh, well, you've never updated it. Your router has all of the social diseases. You know, I think everything should have passwords. The problem is like, oh, it should have a good password. It should have a good password. And, you know, they're not fixing any of the other things that are.
There are plenty of other things. I mean, that is a fair point. Yeah. Forcing people to adapt firmware updates could have been a part of this law. I'm not saying it should have been, but you know, that is another element that causes a security problem. So I'm a little on your side. I think this is a good practice. Companies absolutely should require their users to set up a unique password on a device before it goes into operation. You shouldn't have default passwords out in the wild like that. I don't love the idea of it being a state law, but I guess if it nudges people down the right road.
What'll be awesome is, you know, this is, you know, are they going like, is, are, you know, is Netgear going to change their practices for this? Is you know, Linksys going to change their practices for this? Is Asus going to change their practice for this?
If they want to sell in California, they're going to need to.
Yeah. So basically, so Amazon will now have to keep track of all of the vendors who do or do not have secure passwords on all of the Internet of Crap stuff that's available. You know what I mean?
Like, it's a good question. Will Amazon be liable for selling a device that has fouled this? I haven't read the law closely enough to know. I would hope that only the manufacturer would be.
They're saying each gadget must have its own unique password.
So. Or require a password to be set up by the user.
Right.
Rather than having to set it up. Although Amazon does a good job of having unique information on each device when you order it. So there are systems for that.
Well, I guess if they can keep, you know, various types of spray paint, glues, and solvents out of California.
Well, like when you buy a Fire device, this is a problem for me. Whenever I buy a Fire device, it always comes with my account on it. And then I have to switch it to Eileen's because I bought it on my Amazon account. But I'm like, I don't want my account on there. I want Eileen's account. She owns all the good movies. TechCrunch reports screenshots from tipster Jane Manchin Wong show that Instagram has prototyped a privacy setting to let you share your location history with Facebook. There is a concern here, but there's a lot of overreaction to this. If turned on, the setting would use your GPS location from Instagram to target ads in Facebook and Instagram, as well as populate the Facebook profile activity log. Now, the prototype Wong saw was opt in. It defaulted to that being off. You had to go in and turn it on as a user. And Facebook told TechCrunch it has not changed Instagram's location settings. Instagram does not store any location data now. And it is always testing things, it says. So it's concerning that they're trying to convince you to do this because it's just going to target more ads at you. But at least, Patrick, it's not as bad as some of the headlines would make you think in that it's not going to be turned on automatically, or at least it wasn't in this prototype.
There's nothing I can do without completely going on for 10 or 15 minutes.
But you have to admit, like, some people are overreacting to this as if they were forcing you to share your location. And this is – maybe you don't want them to do this, but if they're going to, this is the best practice.
No, that I get. But it's also – Facebook does something this week, everyone overreacts.
Instagram
does something, you know, weird this week, everyone overreacts, but with a much higher quality of photos.
But in a beautiful way, with such good lighting. Yeah. London's National Theatre and Accenture's Extended Reality Group have partnered to create augmented reality glasses for patrons with hearing impairments. That lets them better enjoy the theatre's production. They are using the Epson Moverio BT350 smart glasses to show you live captioning during the performance. They use some voice following software that listens to the production and then finds where you are in a script and shows you the proper text, including things like lighting and sound cues. 90 glasses are available in the theater for Hadestown and War Horse right now and will roll out to all the productions at the National Theater later this month.
It's very cool.
Yeah. We don't hear enough stories like this, right?
Well, it was funny. We were talking about the Amazon Basics microwave with Alexa, mm. and you know, kind of, you know, feeling silly about it. And we got a couple emails on tech thing from viewers who are visually impaired. One of whom was like, "You never think about, you know, nobody ever thinks about, you know, people, you know, with you know, different abilities."
Well, especially because most microwaves have those flat buttons where you can't even feel them very well, and, right? You can't tell which one's which.
Well, I found like an entire website dedicated, or entire set of pages on a website dedicated to which microwaves are the most friendly for visually impaired people. And basically, one of the guys said is you pretty much can't use any advanced features. You can memorize buttons. There are buttons with Braille on a couple of the manufacturers, or you know, at least with bumps that function mm-hmm. like Braille that aren't actually Braille. But one of the guys said, look, yes, this is kind of silly, but it would be incredibly useful for me, and I hope it's a harbinger of having more and more voice control devices because they are so incredibly useful, which also led to me reading a bunch of articles about people who are taking advantage of Google Home and you know, Echo equipment to really give them an unprecedented level of kind of freedom within their home.
I do love that this story doesn't involve augmented reality promises. It involves augmented reality. It's not, you know, it's not overreaching. It's just showing you captioning, you know, floating in your field of view. That's what makes it augmented reality. And it's not from Google. It's not from Microsoft. It's from Epson, and Accenture, you know, which is a huge company, but, and it's done to promote the arts in the National Theater. And so, I think this is a really, really cool thing that's being done. Well done. Good on you, National Theater.
Golf clap.
To get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Now, you may be thinking, how did you not talk about the iMac and MacBook problems? We're going to talk about them right now. Mac Rumors obtained an internal Apple document that shows that iMac Pro and 2018 MacBook Pro models must pass Apple diagnostics for certain repairs to be completed. This has to do with the T2 chip secure enclave. For the MacBook Pro, that applies to repairs involving the display, the logic board, the Touch ID, and the top case, which includes the keyboard, battery, trackpad, and speakers. This is all stuff that is in one way or another. With the top case, it's because the Touch ID is in the MacBook.
I mean, stuff this is essentially everything.
It works with the secure enclave, and everything works with the secure enclave. For the iMac Pro, it means repairs to the logic board and the flash storage. Now, on the good side, Apple stores and authorized service providers can use Apple Diagnostic Suite. So it's not just Apple stores. However, repair shops out there, and there are many, one not too far from me, without Apple certification would not be able to complete the repairs. So this immediately, Patrick, goes right into the right to repair. Right? Apple's going to say, hey, if somebody's not certified, they might not do a very good job. In fact, it might not be safe to let those uncertified people fix stuff. But the arguments against this are that, well, if you only allow certified people to fix it, that drives the price up because you can limit that market. Apple could counter that they've increased the number of authorized service providers worldwide to 5,000 recently, and you could counter that 5,000 worldwide does not sound like that large of a number per capita. But we've talked about this just not too long ago on DTNS, September 19th, in regards to farm equipment with the John Deere settlement with the Farm Bureau in California. That's sort of a lot of people criticize as giving away too much to big manufacturing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
How do you feel this fits into that whole conversation?
It's funny you should mention that because I like dumped a whole bunch of links into the show notes. Oh my goodness. Okay, so I do on some level come from farm culture, and I am a geek, and actually a lot of farmers are geeks, especially today. This is not new for Apple. That's the first thing I want to say. I mean, one of my favorite iFixit articles of all time, and I'm a huge iFixit fan. I'm a huge Kyle Weens fan. I'm a huge Repair.org fan. So let me just state my biases up front.
Sure.
I think it should be easy to fix things. But, you know, I mean, 2011, Apple's diabolical plan to screw your phone, which is such a wonderful title. And that's when they started talking about the pentalobe screws that Apple put on iPhones because people were fixing their iPhones. Gosh darn it. I mean, it was just like last year where Apple was basically like, iPhones are too complicated. You can't fix these. You're consumers. Your role is to consume more of our products.
By the way, this is Patrick's artistic impression of Apple's attitude, not an exact quote.
Yeah, if Apple decides to attack anyone, attack me. Leave the rest of the other tech.
Well, I just, this is not what Apple would say. And in fact, I don't even think my personal opinion is Apple isn't anti-repair. Apple is pro-Apple. Apple's like, we don't care about your right to repair. We just want to make devices that we think work for us. So the pentalobe screws could have been meant to prevent repairs, but more likely someone was like, hey, these are really pretty and they work better in this and that case. And someone said, yeah, but they'll be harder to repair. And they said, we don't care about that. Let's use them.
Yeah. Let me quote an art, Lisa Jackson, Apple's vice president of policy and social initiatives in that motherboard article, quote, I don't think you can say repairability equals longevity. I often say if you're in the repair business, repair seems like the answer, but actually you need to design for the life cycle. And Apple has designed for some time around durability, around the idea we can release the latest and greatest product. Your old product still works and has value.
Yeah.
And it's like on one hand, you know, that's a very kind of like, well, yes, if you're a manufacturer, manufacturing is the answer.
Totally.
But as you know, when I bought my last iPhone, it bent and destroyed the screen in the first 6 days. You know, their idea of durability and my idea of durability may not actually mesh in any meaningful way.
Well, and their idea or their claim of durability in a press spin, let's be fair, let's be honest here, is different than durability in reality. And where I come down on this is, listen, man, if Apple feels like pentalobe screws and glued on cases fit their design aesthetic better, fine. You know what? That's their right to make their product the way they want. Don't mess with my right to melt that glue and buy a pentalobe screwdriver or hire someone who isn't approved by Apple to take a crack at it. I think there needs to be a balance between that, and whether you're designing for durability or not doesn't matter.
Right.
I should be able, if I own a piece of equipment, to treat it however I want.
Well, yeah, and that's where things started getting really complicated. There was a time when basically all of the electronics you bought, or a striking amount of the electronics you bought, actually had the schematics for the entire circuit board layout. Now, obviously, you know, things are much more complicated than they were back in the day. You know, but when you look at something,
there was a time
like
before that when they didn't too. That was kind of a wave of a right to repair of its own that caused that sort of behavior.
Yeah, but I mean, it was interesting. I actually got to go into Phil Sadow's warehouse in Berkeley, the guy who reversed engineers all of the tools he needed to be able to, you know, control and reset things inside of the Tesla control, basically the Tesla operating system, because he got into salvaging Teslas, and he reverse engineered everything he needed to do that because Tesla doesn't want you to salvage Teslas. Tesla wants them to disappear. And, you know, it's been interesting when you start, you know, listening to some of it, like, you know, Elon Musk was, you know, basically like, okay, you know, we have to take, and obviously Elon Musk at this particular stage of his career says a lot of things in a lot of ways.
It's getting harder and harder to wonder. Yeah, exactly. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Musk was like, you know, Tesla's bringing collision repairs in houses. Outside firms take weeks to months to repairs, driving Tesla owners and us crazy. And then he also was kind of like, you know, oh, yeah, well, it also could be part of the problem is we're not actually making parts available.
Oops. I think you can go too far one way or the other on these things. I think you can go too far in the conspiracy theory of designed obsolescence. I don't think that makes sense for most manufacturers.
I'm not going to design obsolescence.
I know you're not. I'm just saying. I think some people will tilt that way, and I don't think they're designing even necessarily to make it hard to repair. But I also think you can go too far the other way in defense of the companies and say like, oh, they're doing it for your best interest. No, they're not. They're doing it for their best interest, whatever those interests are. So I think there needs to be a balance. And I think the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which I've been talking with you about since 1999, practically, is once again having an unintended side effect, because while the argument from John Deere and Apple and others is, yeah, but if you have just anybody repair these, it's unsafe. They could damage your device. That's not what the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is meant to do. And yet the DMCA is what these companies use to defend against your right to repair by saying, it's well, if you re-engineer tool. That software or you take that hardware design, you're violating our copyright. The DMCA is not meant to keep you safe from things. Also, that's kind of a silly argument. It's up to you. If you want to fix something, you should have the right to fix it. If you damage it, well, that's your problem.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because, you know, when you look at the John Deere stuff's been really fascinating because, one, it's been amusing to watch people be like, farmers use GPS. Yes.
Oh, yeah, they do. It's and drones and yeah.
Yeah. And all sorts of amazing stuff. These are big money operations, you know, and they're incredibly sophisticated. And, you know, when you think about when you get over in the Central Valley over here, some of the bigger operations, they start they run like one of the things I saw a video of once. I think it was basically 8 tractors planting seeds running simultaneously because, you know, when their chief, basically the guy who was in charge of the agricultural side of this business, when he pulled the trigger, they were going to lay down like, I think it was 40,000 acres of whatever it was, cotton, let's say. As fast as they could do it, like the conditions were optimal, and the starting gun went off, and they literally had 8 or 10 of these tractors running 24/7, like 3 shifts of drivers, go 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 go, and you know, if one of those goes down, you know, then you've got to like, okay, it's 3 in the morning, and I've got to wait until John Deere opens. No, they have something else scheduled, and you know, it sounds silly, but it's alarming when you start to realize how difficult it can be to do even minimal maintenance, or how frustrating it can be. I mean, the Massachusetts, the Act, the independent. Yeah, it's when you start looking at some of those, like, a Massachusetts Act to make it easier for independents to get the information they need to repair cars and the parts they need to repair cars is one of the reasons why we have sort of federal laws about that, because people got upset because, you know, with all due respect, like some of the worst
you know, some of the worst service I've ever gotten is actually from a Ford dealer. You know, I had a Ford vehicle. I would take the vehicle to get fixed, and the vehicle would come back, and something new would be broken because the repair guys were trying to jam through so much stuff they weren't paying attention. Like,
well,
you know,
two things: when you have a captive market, and or your money comes from sales of new things. Again, I'm not saying there's a conspiracy theory where they break cars, but they don't prioritize things for service and repair in that situation.
Well, I find it frustrating. One, I mean, personally, you know, I find it frustrating that the way a lot of stuff is designed today is you can't upgrade it, or there's minimal upgradability, or there's minimal repairability, or the repair is basically like, spend an extra $300 for the service and then spend $79 every time you break your phone. That is a fantastic business model for Apple.
Yeah. And they did lower some prices on that recently, but yeah, they did, it's still a pretty good business.
There's too much design around disposal, I think, and not enough design around repair. I think a lot of companies, in some cases, it's the lawyers, right? You know, Tesla is any Tesla that is in an accident, they basically don't want to go back on the street because they're afraid something's going to happen, and that's going to negatively impact the image of Tesla and electric cars and, you know, the value of their
liability,
stock,
et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, it's big and it's messy and it's complicated, but I think right to repair is important because I think most of us would actually like things to be able to be fixed. Is that too much to ask?
No, it seems right. Let us know what you think on our subreddit. Do you agree? DailyTechNewsShow.reddit.com. Submit some stories there for us as well. And this one was submitted today. You can also discuss this sort of thing at Facebook.com/group/DailyTechNewsShow. Real quickly, email from Dave from soon-to-be-snowing Michigan says, for the Chinese hack, I participate in quite a few organizations within the automotive cybersecurity field, including an advisory board and a standards committee. And we speak to mostly U.S. government representatives frequently. Just last week, there was quite the passionate, maybe even inflammatory presentation from a member of the CIA talking about the offensive cyber capabilities of Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. Some of my European colleagues were, if not dismissive of the opinion, that this was partisan rhetoric. I'll be very interested if their opinions have changed with this news. Then again, supply chain security is a very concerning topic with us. So really, this isn't particularly surprising, other than someone evidently got caught. Anyway, keep up the great work. I already gave you guys a raise last year, and you may be due one this year as well. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. And thank you, Len Peralta, for illustrating today's show. What have you done with us?
Well, you know, I usually don't take a political stance necessarily on things, but this is about as political as I'll get on the show. It's the right to repair. This is something that I think if you believe in the right to repair, which I personally do, this is something you can print out, hang up in your cubicle or on your wall. You bought it. You own it. You have the right to repair it. This is the right to repair. And I feel that this is pretty important, guys. This is a big deal. So that's where I stand.
It's like the Uncle Sam wants you of right to repair. This is great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You bought it. You own it. You have the right to repair it.
Listen, folks, if you don't want to buy this for yourself at LenPeraltaStore.com, why not buy it for your local repair shop and just give it to them to hang up in their shop? I think it'd be great.
I'm sure they would love it. Yeah. Go to LenPeraltaStore.com. It's right there on the front page. And, you know, you can also, if you become one of my patrons, you can get this. You get every piece of this art as part of your rewards. So go check it out.
You also have the right to more Patrick Norton. Where can you exercise that right, Patrick?
Oh, my goodness. AVXL.com is the podcast I host with Mr. Robert Harum, where we talk about home theater and audio and headphones and all the things to make your entertainment experience more awesome. We don't care if you're rich or if you have no money and you're stuffed in a dorm room. We're going to help you out. And, of course, Tech Thing, TEKTHING.com, the weekly tech show I host with Shannon Morse.
We exist 95% or more because of your direct support on Patreon. We thank you with lots of cool stuff. So please, please, please check out what's available not only at our store, dailytechnewsshow.com/store, but also at our Patreon, patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can find out more about that at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. No show Monday. It's a holiday in the U.S., but back on Tuesday with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.